This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Friends and neighbors, this is episode number 89 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we made it through our illness. We talked about on the last show that there had been a pox on the Girlfriend Bracket house. And Katie, you sure sound a lot better.
Yes, I am definitely 100% now.
Yeah, and I am as well. Breathing is fun. That's all I can say. Like when you you forget how much fun breathing is until you can't do it anymore. And even better when you can do it out of two nostrils. So I feel like my world has kind of opened up a little bit in the last week.
Breathing is so underrated.
It really is, you know, and yeah, it really is. So we have a very special guest with us this week. She is a returning guest on the show. We had her on a while back, and she's been extremely busy since then. She's been doing some really big things, and we wanted to have her back on the show to talk about all of that. So welcome back to the show, Courtney Rudiger. Hello.
Hey, ladies. Thanks for having me back. I have to just say that I agree that breathing is highly overrated. I spent all of last month with pneumonia, hardly able to breathe myself. So we're in a special club now, I guess.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I mean, pneumonia is like is higher on the totem pole than like bronchitis. Like pneumonia is worse than bronchitis. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that's all it was. But then they did the x-ray. They're like, yeah, no, that's pneumonia. I'm like, wow, did not see that coming.
Wow. Yeah, that kind of reminds me of when I first got diagnosed with bronchitis. It started off as being just the sniffles, and I was like, well, I'll take a day or two off of work. And then I woke up one day, and I couldn't swallow, and I couldn't talk. And I ended up going to the doctor, and they took a chest x-ray, and they were like, no, girl, this is bronchitis. Do you see this picture? Your lungs basically hate you right now. And I was like, oh, okay. So there's always that feeling of, you know, I've got this until somebody tells you that you really don't, and then you realize how bad it is. So, but we want to hear about good things, and it sounds like you had an amazing weekend, Courtney. You were at Grand Prix San Jose, and why don't you tell everybody how it went?
I was at Grand Prix San Jose. It's a little bit far for me. I'm in Virginia Beach, so it's completely on the other side of the country, but I wanted to attend because I love Limited, and I have a lot of friends on the West Coast, so I thought it'd be really great to go, play a great format, see some great people, and I did all of those things, and I had made it a goal for myself at the beginning of this year that I wanted to day two a GP, and I had a couple in mind that I knew I'd be attending, and so I went out there with that goal in mind, but not really, you know, anticipating anything big. But then I ended up indeed making day two, and in fact, I top 64'd with a record of 11-3-1, ended up 47th out of a little over 1,900 people, and that was also enough to cash out the GP and get my first, not just one, but two pro points.
Wow. Nice.
That's so awesome.
So sweet.
Wow. Way more than I ever expected planned for. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And I know I was keeping up with everything on Twitter because you were tweeting about your progress. And there was also an organization that recently got started called Pay It Forward, and they gave you a bounty for doing so well. And can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Pay It Forward. It's a new initiative. They just got off the ground. They are looking out for female and non-binary Magic players to kind of help them get going, give them some recognition. And what they're doing is for GPs, for the top finisher, giving them a playmat. And so there was a playmat designed, and so that's what I won. In addition to that, other people can donate bounties if they wish. So Cassidy, one of the judges, he had donated a box of Aether Revolt for the top finisher, which I received from him as well.
Wow.
That's awesome.
And did that inspire you to like want to keep going, to know that this could be a thing going forward?
It definitely did. I mean, it definitely inspired me to want to pay it forward myself. I'm already looking into what I can donate to give to someone for the next GP, for the next bounty. So I absolutely want to keep it going. I think it's a great idea. Anything to help give us a little bit more recognition out there is certainly beneficial.
Yeah, because, you know, the topic of women in Magic became a hot topic again this past week, and it was kind of, you know, good timing that as we're all discussing it, you just come through and you crush.
Yeah, that's kind of coming through and crushing was kind of what happened. That's my Twitter updates were mostly me out of disbelief. Is this really happening? And also a lot of excitement.
So you're just going through this, and like you said, you said you didn't practice too much, or like
I practiced a little bit. We had practiced making some sealed pools, bought a box when it came out. My husband Andrew came out to the GP as well, so we were practicing with each other. But I never drafted the format before, and wow. I ended up going 5-1 on day two in the draft. So that was also my first time drafting at a GP. Wow. So the first time doing the time draft and the draft and pass, all of that. All that process, which actually wasn't that bad once I got into it, but just the first time doing all of that, to be able to come out 5-1 was, it felt really good.
I remember the first time I earned a pro point, it was a GP Indianapolis on my birthday. And, it inspired me, for a second there, I was looking at the GP calendar and I was like, how many pro points do I need to do this? Like, how much is silver and how much is gold? And is that something you thought about? Like, now that you actually have pro points, like, do you want more?
Yeah, it actually is something I've been thinking about. I was on the plane and looking at all the different events, all the other GPs, and also looking at the Star City Opens as well, even though there's no pro points there, but still, more events to go to, more big events, get more experience. I'd already planned to go to Richmond this year since that's pretty local for me. And I'm also planning on GP Vegas, and I will do a main event there as well. So now it's just a matter of if there's other ones I want to stick in the calendar as well. It's definitely very tempting now that I've kind of got that bug.
Yeah. You're looking at it and you're like, can I do this? Like, and you're starting to plan your itinerary and, narrow it down to what formats you like. And it really does seem possible.
It does. I think this weekend really gave me the confidence boost I needed. I always felt like I was a good player and people would tell me I was, but I never had any results, even at local things, to really show for it. And so this showed me you can do this. You're a good player. You can hang with the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. And to top things off, you also committed to giving your prize money to the ACLU. Like, how dope is that?
I did. Well, as we all know, there's a lot going on right now in this country, and I don't want to go into it right now, all those negative details, but I'd seen the events unfolding while I was playing this weekend, even amidst all my excitement, and I felt that it just felt like the right thing to do to cap off the weekend.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I actually thought of you when I found out you were coming on the show tonight. I thought of you because when you last came on the show, you were talking about some innovation that you were doing in Modern. You were playing Tron at the time, and you were talking about how you were, instead of doing a green-red splash, you were doing a green-white splash. And I remember that we were all so fascinated by that because green-red had been the default for so long. And now it's interesting, now that Eye of Ugin has been banned, and in response to certain things happening in the metagame, green-white Tron is now like the default Tron to be in Modern. Like, you, I was like, oh my God, she was completely ahead of the curve on that one.
I know. I've thought that was so funny. And I was just responding to my local metagame. I'd go to Wednesday Night Modern and green white was performing better for me. And now to see it take off, and even green black as well. Green red definitely isn't where it used to be.
Yeah, so you really do kind of have an eye for things. And you talked about knowing that you're good at something and maybe not necessarily having the results to back it up. But, I feel like that's something. I feel like you saw something there, and, it just sort of took time to kind of go your way.
Yeah, I definitely, it's better than I thought.
Oh, and we're also happy for you. I think I speak for everybody when we say we're just thrilled for you.
Thank you, guys. Absolutely. I have to say, all of the support that I got on Twitter and in person as well from everybody cheering me on and keeping me fed and hydrated and calm and everything else, it really helped yesterday. Absolutely, 100%. So thank you.
Fantastic. Yeah. And we're really glad that you're here, and we definitely would love to hear more from you throughout the show. So hopefully we get to do more of that. So SCG Richmond also happened this weekend. It was a standard open, and it looks like Saheeli Rai really busted out. Like, she made a big impact. The Saheeli Cat combo, really busted out last weekend, but I really feel like this weekend it became even more solidified. Hallie, taking a look at this top 64, this top 32, what do you think of standard right now?
I'm actually very surprised by what I saw this weekend, because it seemed like last weekend the green black decks had a big showing. And certainly there were a lot of green black decks in this mix here. I see our friend Jadeen actually did very well with green black aggro, along with a whole bunch of other players. And so that deck is still very much a thing. But one thing that my testing group had been talking about this week was sort of how to build a good control deck to combat those green-black aggro strategies. And it looked like maybe some of these Saheeli players finally found the right balance of spells. We were talking about using Fumigate and, you know, leaning on Fumigate a little bit harder. And it seems like, you know, some of these players have started doing that also. The one thing I really liked about Dylan Donegan's list, the list that won the whole thing, was that he had two copies of Nahiri the Harbinger between the main deck and the sideboard. And Nahiri, I actually think Nahiri is an underrated card right now. She comes in with a lot of loyalty and can protect herself fairly well in that regard. But she's also a really good sort of catch-all answer to a lot of troublesome permanents. Because it seems like a lot of these control decks have the means to deal with creatures. Like, they have Fumigate, they have Harnessed Lightning, they have Immolating Glare. Like, they can deal with creatures, but sometimes, you know, we'd be testing against, you know, decks that have Fevered Visions in them, and Nahiri turned out to be pretty good against that. She can exile an enchantment, or, you know, a lot of decks sometimes try to run Quarantine Field in their sideboards. Nahiri can get rid of a Quarantine Field. So she seems like a really good answer, and I would love to see a lot more of her in Standard as a support character for Saheeli. And yeah, I mean, the combo is very real. The Saheeli Felidar Guardian combo is very real. It's the kind of thing where, you know, if a lot of players aren't expecting it, you know, if someone just taps out, you can just land the combo there. And we were testing against that deck quite a bit in our sort of Pro Tour gauntlet. We were able to build a control deck that we thought was good against it. That could possibly, you know, side into a Planeswalker combo kind of thing. So we're going to be interested to see if the control decks in the future sort of go with Saheeli as their plan A, or if they try to be more of a hard control deck to beat the Saheeli decks and then maybe side into the Saheeli combo against other decks that are more vulnerable to it.
What would you say to people who are watching coverage or who are on social media and they're looking at the first 2 weeks of results after the bans and they're seeing what appears to be a very stale metagame? You know, they're seeing a lot of black-green aggro. They're seeing a lot of the Saheeli combo, and that's kind of really all they're seeing. You know, there are certainly some other decks kind of on the fringe, but it does seem like, you know, we are back to a standard with two decks having the lion's share of the format. You know, do you think that that's accurate? Do you think that there just needs to be more time for the format to kind of sort itself out, or maybe that things will just change after the Pro Tour?
My philosophy is always to wait for the Pro Tour. Just about every Standard season, we see certain decks come out of the gate during the first week or two, and then the Pro Tour happens and the meta completely shifts. So my philosophy is always to use the decks that come out of the first week or two as a basis for a testing gauntlet, and then try to find decks that beat those decks, because people who are testing for the Pro Tour are going to see this so-called established metagame and then try to beat that. So these are the level 0 and level 1 decks. The level 2 decks are going to be the decks that actually emerge out of the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I think people, you know, kind of get inspired by the Modern, you know, the Modern format. You know, we've, in the last 2 weeks since the bans, Modern has been incredibly diverse. You know, we talked about some of the, you know, the decks that we saw doing well in the Mox Championship and the decks that we saw doing well in the Modern Classic. And even this weekend at the SCG Richmond Classic, Goryeo's Vengeance came in first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the week before that, it was Ad Nauseam. And I mean, Chris, you know, you and I being sort of the Modern folks here, you know, when you see this top 16 and there's taking turns in 16th place, and Scapeshift, old school rug Scapeshift in 12th place, Abzan Company, Naya Company, blue, white, red prison, you know, 8 or 9 different archetypes here. Like, what is this? What does this mean to you?
Well, going into this weekend for the tournament we're going to play in, this speaks to me that I definitely need to be packing artifact and enchantment hate. So that's definitely going to be a thing. I like that even from the previous Classic that was Modern to this one, the deck lists aren't even necessarily the same. They're, I mean, like you said, Ad Nauseam took first place. Now it's Goryeo's Vengeance. We have Burn in there, and I think Burn was barely even a blip in the top eight the previous weekend. And Control's coming back, and I'm completely fine with that. I like that Control is getting some time to shine in Modern, where it didn't really get a chance with Infect being so prevalent and other strategies. So I like having a diverse mix. Am I a little sad that Red White Prism's in there? A little bit. That's a difficult road. However, I feel good because I've been testing against it, because I do have friends that play that deck. So I'm like, okay, now if this is going to be a thing, I'm a little more well-prepared. Yeah, I liked that old school Scape Shift was in there. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Hey, girl, you know, that's really nice to see. I saw Mono Blue taking turns. I'm like, oh, man, Aaron's going to be so sad that's there. It's just so annoying to deal with. But I'm really excited that Modern is more diverse right now. I am pleased to see that, in fact, didn't even make a blip in the top 16 there. That's okay with me. We needed a little bit of shake up to the format, and I'm looking forward to see what decks continue to do well, whether it's at SCG or even when we go to regionals this weekend. I want to see what are going to be the top decks that people are playing.
Yeah, the format being this diverse is, you know, kind of mind-boggling. It does make deck choosing your deck a little difficult, because it's like, you know, I don't know what I need to prepare for, because it really does seem like it's anybody's game. And, you know, I want to mention the seventh place deck. It's listed as Jeskai Control, but from what I can tell, it's purely blue-white with a main deck Aven Mind Sensor.
Gross.
Oh. Yeah.
Main deck Aven Mind Sensor. It's literally just a flash deck. So Restoration Angel, Snapcaster Mage, Vendilion, and click the main deck Aven Mind Sensor. All the hits: Detention Sphere, main deck Blessed Alliance, Disallow, Mana Leak, Negate, Shadow of Doubt, Supreme Verdict, Wrath of God. I mean, just blue, white, no, you can't do this. And
yes.
Right.
Yeah, you guys, I haven't gotten to play Modern in a while, but seeing how diverse this format is making me want to get out there and play. Any day that Infect isn't making a blip makes this Tron player very happy as well. I'm also just a few cards away from finishing Affinity, and I can't wait to test that out.
Yeah, people have been predicting that Tron is going to gain a lot of shares with Infect being gone. People are predicting that the format will ultimately settle on being more of a mid-range format again, with Jund and Abzan kind of rising to the top and Tron being behind that, and you know, the format kind of slowing down a little bit because Death Shadow isn't going to be a thing as much, and the Kiln Fiend decks aren't going to be a thing as much, and Infect has slowed down, and so the format as a whole is going to slow down, and meaning these sort of bigger strategies can kind of happen. And so it really is a good time to be playing Modern. You know, if you are thinking of getting back into the format, there have been, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of events that have proven that you can play anything you want, and it really is anybody's game. So you should definitely come out to regionals if you can. If you have an SCG regionals event near you, please go, or just anywhere near you. It's just a good time.
I will try. It is nearish. I think it's North Carolina for us. I also need to get the red out of my deck. That's how long it's been since I've played. It's still a green red Tron deck.
Well, I don't know. There's still, there's also the Eldrazi Tron that people are trying to make happen, where it has elements of Tron, but they're running like Matter Reshaper and main deck Chalices and World Breakers and things like that. And, you know, I guess there's still a home for it, but I guess people just haven't decided what they want to do.
Yeah, I've seen that list. I've got World Breakers in my own list, which I really like. I definitely don't have Chalices, which isn't helping me out, but I think I really just like the traditional Tron, you know, turn 3 Karns. Speaking of Karn, I just got some amazing Karn altars this weekend from RK Post. If you've seen them, they're on my Twitter. They are amazing. Big shout out to him for for doing that for me this weekend. So yeah, any excuse I have to play those and put those out on a playmat will be awesome.
I saw those, and the theme was a Karn for all seasons.
Yeah, so I've been thinking, I had known I'd wanted him to alter my Karns for a long time. He's one of my favorite Magic artists, and I'd been trying to think of a theme for the four, and the only theme that kept coming to the top was four seasons, and so that's what I gave him, and I didn't see any of them until they were all done. He'd been working on them one at a time throughout the weekend, just holding on to them, and then he did the big reveal at the end, and I was amazed. He did the fall Karn dressed up as Jace for Halloween, not even knowing that I have a 2-year-old named Jace, so it was like an extra bonus. And yeah, they turned out really well. I was really excited.
That's awesome. Katie, do you have any thoughts on standard and modern from what we've seen from like the top 32 of the deck list or anything?
I'm really excited about where modern is at. I feel like it's been a while since we've seen Jeskai control decks, which is what I like to play in modern, making a comeback. And while a few of them are going about it a little differently than I might, I still love all the cards that I'm seeing, like Wrath of God and Verdicts and Spreading Seas. And it's just, it's a good time. I was thinking about maybe breaking out my modern deck because I have, I guess I play modern here on the weekend, so I might swing down for a modern tournament in the upcoming month and see what it's all about.
Oh, there you go. I also found out that there's a variation of Merfolk called Eight Seas that plays four copies of Spreading Seas, and then there's another card, I can't remember the name of it, but it basically does a similar effect.
Seas Clean, God.
And you just mink all the islands and all the fish. And I'm just like, I'd never heard of it before. And Carrick Long was in my chat and he's like, oh yeah, it's called Eight Seas. And I'm like, so we've got eight rack for the black decks, which is just all discard. You have eight whack, which is the goblins. And now we have eight seas. And so, yeah.
Eight is too much of like anything unless you're drawing cards.
Oh man, that's entirely accurate. So while SCG Richmond was going on and while Courtney was slaying at the GP, I played in my first ever big vintage event by myself. There was the Power 9 Challenge, which was taking place on Magic Online. I have only been playing vintage for a couple of months, and every time that I've been playing, I've had somebody on a call with me on Skype to sort of walk me through it, because I still don't know very much about the format, and it's very intimidating. And so this was the first time I was flying completely solo. There was nobody on the call, nobody helping me. I had a bit of a sideboard guide, just like some sort of training wheel, but otherwise I didn't know anything really going into it. I started off really strong. I was 2-0. I won in like dramatic fashion both games. I think there was one game where I had 96 power worth of zombies at one point.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Elish Norn. Yeah, so that was a thing. And I was really, really hype, and I was doing really well, and then I proceeded to lose the next four. So I only went 2-4, but largely it was because there were some games where I just didn't have bazaars, which you kind of need if you're playing Dredge. And then there were some games that were just mostly chalked up to inexperience. So Paradoxical Outcome Storm is very much a thing in Vintage, and the problem with that deck is they're doing so much that you have to decide what you need to counter, because I run Force of Wills and Mental Missteps and Mindbreak Traps. But when they're casting 3 to 4 spells per turn, you just don't know. And when you're new to Vintage, everything just sounds scary. So they're like Mox Opal. It's a fucking Mox Opal. So there's the voice in your head saying, counter the Mox, counter the Mox. And you're like, no, it's just a mana rock. You have to let it happen. But again, there's that voice in your head that's going, it's a Mox. Like, you can't just let a Mox resolve. And you're like, no, but you have to. So then the Mox resolves. And then they're like, Ancestral Recall. And again, your mind is going, freaking Ancestral Recall. These are amazing cards and the most powerful cards in Magic. But nope, it's just three cards. You just gotta let it happen. It's like, you know, you really have to identify what's worth countering, what's worth getting into a counter war over. You know, if you're playing with Mindbreak Trap, you have to think about if you can get them to play three spells so that your trap is active. And so there were just a lot of things I didn't really know about just from being kind of new to the format. But, I did end up having a really, really good time. Everybody in the format is so friendly and so supportive. Walking Ballista really busted out as being a card. There were so many copies of Walking Ballista in the top eight. It was disgusting. And I'm looking forward to playing some more Vintage. It's nice to know that I can play it by myself, that I can be okay, that I really don't need the help. And it was just a lot of fun. It was just so wild to, you know, be in a format of just really broken things. And I was just having so much fun. So while we were doing that, Chris, you wrote a brand new blog post, which also took off. And why don't you tell us about it?
I did. It was inspired by the video that Mrs. Mulligan had put out about her perception of women in Magic, and a very simple statement. It was only about a minute long, and she had detailed about how she felt that gender shouldn't come into play when you're sitting down to play Magic against someone, and even in regard to the Pro Tour Team Series. And there were a lot of people that responded to the video, both with criticism, with praise, some with concerns, or just trying to, you know, take her whole message and kind of get everything that she was trying to deliver in it. And I felt that because the response was so varied, I understood what she was trying to say, and I'm like, I get what she means, but I can see where other people might be like, my experience is feeling diminished, or that you're not taking into account these other experiences. And so I wanted to kind of highlight all those things so that I could make it into bigger than what a 1 minute video can say. I mean, I typed like 2,000 words about just how I felt about the subject and just backstory and just trying to show, you know, where we've kind of started from and just to show within a year different things that have been said by other women, different experiences that people have gone through. And while this continues to be a prevalent issue, I don't think that we're making progress backwards. I think it can only continue to be better from here. And so I think that I've got my point across pretty well. And I really enjoyed writing it. I wanted to put it out as soon as I could so that it would still be relevant and so people could watch the video, read these articles from other women, read what I had to say, and kind of take all that information and build from that how they were going to. So yeah, I was just like, I want to respond to this, so I'm going to do it.
You definitely have a knack for conveying all of the sides of an issue without sounding like you're choosing a side, number one, and without sounding confrontational, which is something I admit I'm not very good at. You know, I tend to get very passionate about something and tend to, you know, ride in like a batterskull and, you know, bulldoze with my opinions. And, you know, you really write really gracefully in that regard. Like, you know, you did cover a lot of bases and you didn't make one side feel bad about feeling a certain way. And, you know, one thing I really want to highlight, and we kind of talked about this on Twitter a little bit when the whole issue was brought up again, is, you know, since we've been doing this show and it's going to be 2 years in March, you know, when we first started doing the Girlfriend Bracket, you know, I think we were kind of convinced that it was Wizards' fault or that Wizards wasn't doing enough. And it was sort of the, you know, we kind of had this Wizards do something kind of attitude. And since we've been doing the show for 2 years, I really feel like we've come to understand that it really is happening at the local game store level, that, you know, a lot of the stories that we're hearing and a lot of the experiences that we're hearing about, you know, are, that's where the buck stops. Like, we're hearing more women saying it was, you know, I didn't go any further. Like, I walked in that game store and I either saw the full table mat, titty play mat, or I saw the dirty bathroom, and something made me not want to come back again. And we're not really hearing as many GP horror stories as we used to, or open horror stories as we used to. It really does seem like it stops at the local game store level. And that's where, you know, I really think we need to divert more of our energy towards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I know that my experience positive, someone else's hasn't been. And I do think that there are stores that do recognize that, you know, they do have issues there that they're trying to correct. I know that if something came up by me, it'd be dealt with and be done, and they wouldn't be welcome back if it was a person, or they would work on their image. And I appreciate stores that are very concerned about that, because some aren't. Do I think that local game stores are the main reason that women are on the pro tour? Absolutely not. That's a silly notion to think. But do I think that it could be a reason? Absolutely.
One thing I think that's been really great to see, at least since I've been involved over the last couple of years, is seeing the community of women being built on social media. There's Facebook mm-hmm. groups, Twitter conversations. There's a lot of support there that I found very valuable. And I am fortunate to have a local store that's very supportive, very welcoming to everybody. But I know not everybody has that. So knowing that there's also this huge community of people online that you can reach out to and talk to has been really great.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it seems like there's been more of an initiative. You know, you mentioned the Play It Forward group, Courtney, and, you know, we really are trying, and I think that I also appreciate that we're trying different things. You know, so we try the Ladies on the Grind Facebook group. Now we're trying sort of the idea of the bounty, or sort of incentivizing women to go to events. You know, it was one thing to sort of do the, you know, yes, you should go, it'll be awesome. It's another to say, okay, if you go, here's a play mat, here's a box, here's a t-shirt. It's nice to see us sort of trying different plans of attack to sort of help with the issue. And it does feel like we're really onto something here. And I always appreciate the discussion.
Yeah. And yeah. And I know when this whole discussion was happening on social media, the idea came up that focusing on gender was a negative thing. And I think we perceive it that way because what we think of when we think of focusing on gender is, you know, harassment at the local game store level, you know, men harassing women, being misogynistic, or, you know, making negative assumptions based on people's gender, or stereotyping people based on their gender. And I agree that that's uncalled for, and I agree that we should treat everyone equally. But I think there are some positives that come from, you know, like you said, women organizing for a common cause, women coming together to promote each other. I think there are ways to focus on gender and still contribute positively to the community. And so, you know, like I said, as I had said on social media, I agreed with some aspects of what Mrs. Mulligan said, but I disagree that that focusing on gender is inherently a negative thing.
And one of the things I really love about the discussion of women in magic over the last few years is that Chris's article brought up a lot of the different articles that have been written over the past 2 years. And what I really liked about it was that each of these articles, I remember when they came out and it was like a huge thing on social media and a lot of people were talking about it. And then eventually it kind of like fades into the background and people go back to their normal lives, just living as they were. And then another one would come out and the discussion would be brought up again. And I think that bringing up the discussion more and more frequently is what's needed for people to actually start to change. And I like to think that's why the last few years, like, inclusivity in magic has been changing, not because it just was a flare-up passion that some people had and then let it die out. Like, I feel like the fact that it keeps coming up and keeps, you know, being in people's faces, for lack of a better term, makes it more visible. And I think that visibility is really important. I don't think that everything in magic should be about gender, but I do think that if you want to have, you know, a good local game store and a good play group and, you know, have everybody having a good experience, you need to keep bringing these things to the forefront to get them to change. And I think that's what we've been seeing over the last 2 years, which is why I'm always excited when Chris writes a new article, because, you know, she writes a new article and then maybe somebody else on Hipsters will write an article, and it kind of just keeps, you know, it's that nagging thing in your side, like, we're going to fix it one way or another. We're going to keep poking you until it fixes. So yeah. I really like that the community is not letting it just, you know, flare up and die out.
And I do feel like every time it does sort of come around again, I do feel like we move a little bit closer. You know, mm-hmm. I don't feel like we're rehashing the same points and we're not seeing any progress. I feel like the meter moves a little more to the right every single time, to eventually a point where we will just sort of be there and that'll be glorious. And, you know, the one thing I wanted to add about, you know, Mulligan's video is that, you know, people oftentimes feel like you have to choose. And one thing I've learned since I've been getting involved with feminism and social justice is that you really can do both. You know, if you support women, it doesn't mean by default that you hate dudes. You know, there was a comment that was made of, well, you know, why are you not happy for the pro tour teams? And I was like, no, I'm fucking thrilled. And I hope Reed Duke slays them all. But at the same time, I can also look at that roster and be thrilled to see Reed and thrilled to see Huey, and also be sad that there's no women on there. You can do both. Yeah. You know, people were making it seem like we were choosing, where it's like if we were expressing concern or sadness that there are no women on there, where by default we were shitting on the pro tour teams. And it's not like that at all. Like, you can do both. You know, you can be for women in magic and love dudes and have no problem with dudes. And, you know, you can also support police and also still hold them accountable when things like Black Lives Matter events happen. You know, people feel like they have to choose. And, you know, the one thing that made sort of social justice easier for me was realizing that I can do both. Mm-hmm. And it really is quite freeing. And I really hope that that's something people take away from this, is that, you know, you don't have to choose. You're not by default, crapping on something. It's not a domination thing. Like, we're not trying to completely eliminate the other side or what have you. And just getting people to realize that that's a thing and that you can do both.
Yeah,
I agree. That's definitely something that I feel comes up whenever someone brings up an issue in magic in regard to their gender or their experience or anything. It's automatically, are you hating on men? Men are not the enemy. It's like, if men are the enemy, then I have to rethink my social circle. That's not at all what anyone's saying. I want men to be my ally. I want men to stand up for things that they see that are wrong. I don't perceive them as the enemy by any means, and I don't think anyone should either. All we're asking for is for everyone to get along, and maybe one day that will happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There was also some talk on social media I saw in response to Mrs. Mulligan's video, largely from men, but I'm not saying there are any, just saying that a lot of them had this thought that a lot of the discussion surrounding Mrs. Mulligan was attacking her, especially from females in the community responding to her video and sharing their thoughts. And there's a woman on Twitter named Gemma. She's Gem of Magic. And I just wanted to point out that she had a really good point about the way that women and men communicate. And men largely have a debate style of communication, whereas women tend to have a style of communication where it's like, you share your experience and I'll share my experience, and then we'll kind of see where we're at after that. And so I think that a lot of the people interpreting the shared experiences on that big long Twitter thread, you know, those are just, I don't feel like anybody was trying to attack Mrs. Mulligan, and you know, she might have felt that way. I'm not sure. I haven't really talked to her about it. But I just wanted to say that I think that a lot of people were just trying to share their diverse experiences. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of men who thought that people were not being kind or they were attacking her and her views. But I think that the communication style is just can be variable between the two genders. Mm-hmm. So I hope that she didn't feel that way. But I also wanted to address a few of the people who were like, you guys are all just ragging on her. And I was like, I don't see that happening. I don't know. I read a lot of the comments and I was like, I think everybody's just sharing their individual opinions. But so I just wanted to point that out too.
Yeah. And I mean, the thread from Gem of Magic was stellar. You know, she hit on several really good points there about how, you know, she brought up the metaphor of a person in a wheelchair and how you can say, well, they have equal, you know, they have equal opportunity to play magic, but if their local game store doesn't have a ramp or any way for them to get in the store, they might have the opportunity, but that doesn't mean they have the access. And so that gets thrown around a lot of, well, we're all at the same starting point. We're really not. And when you bring up financial matters of women making less than men, women having difficulty finding people to travel with, which I know something, Hallie, you've brought up in the past, and having difficult times finding people to room with, and even how we're raised. You know, men are raised to be competitive, to play sports, and women, that's sort of seen as uncouth in women or sort of unattractive in women. And so there are so many elements to this that really just sort of get overlooked. And I really felt like she did a good job, you know, bringing it up peacefully. And most of what I saw was peaceful. I didn't really see any dogpiling. I didn't see any, you know, swearing. It was all like, we love you. We're glad you're in this community. We just think maybe this could have deserved better than a minute, 30-second video. And I do feel like eventually that point was brought home. And I know she even retweeted your post, Chris. So, yes. I'd like to think that it's all kind of, you know, blown over and that we have now gotten our intent out there and there was no shade by it whatsoever.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We love everyone that was involved, their criticisms, their praise, all those people. So we love Mrs. M. No doubt about that.
I plan on using her coupon code to buy Goryeo's Vengeance.
Yay!
I really need to be stopped. So while we're on the subject of good articles, Brian Brown DeWin, who's now writing for TCG Player, which is fantastic, wrote an article, and I don't normally get into like finer points articles or like, you know, next level articles. They don't really do much for me, but I took one read at this and I was like, this is an amazing post. And he wrote an article called Being Correct Versus Being Right. And I know, Hallie, this also kind of struck a nerve for you. So why don't you tell everybody about it?
Sure. So BBD wrote this article called Being Correct Versus Being Right, where he tries to understand why it was that he leveled up so much in Magic from 2015 to 2016. And it sounds like it mostly came from a mental shift. And this, I guess this title is a little difficult to parse because often in our culture, we use the terms right and correct as, synonyms for each other. But what he, I guess what he means by this is that, when he says being right, he means choosing the right cards, making the right plays, or, you know, having, being right for him pertains to one's own ideas about magic. And so there's a difference between making what you think is the right choice or what you see as the right choice versus what's objectively correct. So correct for him is an objective thing, whereas right is sort of subjective or, you know, can differ between players. And so he talks about the difference between, you know, having to be right all the time or believing yourself to be right versus doing something that's objectively correct.
Yeah, this felt really next level for me. Like, this was something that, you know, being in a community around magic, there's a lot of talk of being right. And there's a lot of talk of, you know, anytime something happens, people have these intellectual type arguments about it. And his article really made me kind of realize how bogus some of them are, where it's like, you know, these are people who are trying to be, excuse me, sorry about that. That one totally snuck up on me. just let me take a drink. I'm going to start that over again. I'm sorry. So this article came across to me as very next level. And the one thing I really like about this is he sort of breaks down the feeling of the emotion behind being right versus being correct. And there's actually a caption on one of the photos, and it says, being wrong is not synonymous with being unintelligent. And if our ideas are flawed, it doesn't mean that we are stupid, incapable of having good ideas, or that we should stop trying to come up with ideas. And I really related to the portions of this where he talked about how, you know, people are so afraid of being wrong that they're just determined to be right and they're determined to be correct. And the sort of emotional investment that we put in each of these things, and how, you know, it really is kind of freeing to sort of have to not be correct or to not be right, or to understand when the desire to be correct or to be right is really holding you back. And so this is definitely an article that I would recommend anybody reads who wants to get better at the game. And did you all have any other thoughts on this?
I did. I felt like, I think I've kind of touched on this a little bit in one of our previous shows, and I didn't really know how to verbalize it as well as he did in this article, so I definitely recommend reading it, because a lot of what he talks about is the emotional connection to your deck, and how, like, when you're an artist and you make a piece of art and somebody's like, your art sucks, that hits your pride. That's, you know, an emotional response would be a normal thing to somebody saying that, because that's something you made. And it's kind of the same way with magic. Like, if you make a deck and somebody's like, your deck isn't very good, then a lot of people take that as, like, down the chain, I'm not very good because I didn't make a good deck, or whatever it may be. But I think that there's a fine balance, because you do need to have pride in when you create a magic deck, or you tweak a deck to be good for your local meta, or whatever it may be. But you also need to objectively be able to look at your deck if getting better is your goal in magic. You know, if you want to just have fun, if you want to draw the most cards, whatever it may be, that's great. If you want to get better at magic, being able to take an emotional step away from your deck while still maintaining pride for it is really an important step to getting better at the game. Because when somebody says that play was wrong, that doesn't mean that you were unintelligent for making that play. It just means, in the grand scheme of things, that you could have made a different play, which could have had perhaps a better outcome in the game. And being able to objectively look at that and not say, oh, that means I'm bad at magic, or, you know, I'm less intelligent because I didn't make the right play. You have to be able to separate your emotional well-being from your deck in magic, because otherwise it will hold you back for a really long time. So I was really glad that this article is getting as much press as it is, because I feel like it's one of the most important things in magic to be able to move on as a player and, you know, look objectively at yourself and your plays. And so I'm really glad that it's getting the recognition it deserves, because I think it's a really important nuance that a lot of people don't quite understand.
Yeah, I think that fear of being wrong is something that really struck home with me, because, you know, when I have different thoughts about decks or cards, you know, I want to put my opinion out there and say, hey, this is what I think, this is my hot take or whatever. But that fear of being someone immediately correcting me and be like, no, you're wrong about that, stops me almost every time, because not only in my head am I then dumb or not smart, I'm also a woman who has an incorrect opinion on the internet. And yes. And that, you know, I try not to, as you say, Aaron, wear that mantle, but it, you know, it's there. And so that stops me too. But I think I just talked about, I got that boost of confidence, and I'm going to try to be a lot, maybe less careful about just putting those sorts of thoughts and opinions out there, and hopefully the responses, even if someone doesn't agree or thinks that it is wrong, there can be some discussion out of it, because I'm always open to discussion. Just don't immediately shut it down.
Yeah, I've had that same problem where I actually have voiced opinions about like certain cards or certain formats on the internet, and I've had a whole bunch of people jump on me and say that I was wrong. And so I've kind of scaled back and thought, okay, maybe I shouldn't engage. Maybe this is just the wrong time and place to be talking about this. But I mean, everyone is entitled to their opinion, and I don't think we should be afraid of being wrong. I think the problem is more that, you know, we all need to be able to listen to each other. And BBD does bring that up, that, you know, listening to other people's opinions can make us better as Magic players. You know, he talks about feeling like he had the right deck for GP Costa Rica after weeks of testing online. And then he just listened to Brad Nelson make some really good points, and he was convinced to try another deck and, you know, not put all his experience aside, but listen to another person's opinion. And he ended up, you know, going undefeated on the first day. So I think there is a lot of value in listening to other people. And one of the quotes in this article that I that really resonated with me was when he says, feeling the need to prove oneself is an easy way to fall into the trap of being right instead of being correct. One thing that I have been trying to understand is like the grinder mentality, because I spend a lot of time, you know, competing in local tournaments with a lot of other grinders. And one thing I always wonder about is how someone makes that leap from being a grinder to being a pro player. You know, like, how do you go from being the big fish in the small pond to then being a name, or, you know, someone who is like a nationally or internationally recognized Magic player? And I think that a lot of people get caught up in that need to prove themselves, and they really struggle with letting go of their opinions, or being told that their opinions, you know, may not be objectively correct. And I think, you know, this has gone a long way to helping me recognize this both in other people and in myself sometimes.
I could definitely agree with that, because I know that one of the things that I told myself I was going to work on going forward was being able to take criticism from players that were better than me, or try to see different lines that other people didn't see, help me with my deck choices, ask me why I made certain plays. And I think that when he talks about being correct versus being right, there's definitely a sense of ego that comes with it, because when you have to check your ego at the door, or when you don't, you can't look at things objectively, and you care too much about not swallowing your pride, not adapting to other ideas, and you take things more personally than you should. And so I know for me that reading what he had to say was like, yeah, this all makes sense. These are things that I have done. These are things I'm trying to improve on. And especially feeling the need to feel like you can prove that you can hang with other people. And since I've started putting some of that aside, I notice people come up to me more and ask me for deck advice. I'm like, what? Why are you asking me? Like, that's a strange thing to do. They're just like, please help me with this deck, or what do you think? Or even I brewed Frontier with my friend the other day. He's like, okay, help me brew this Frontier deck. This is gonna rock. It's gonna be so much fun. And I was like, ah, well, thanks for asking for my input. So trying to take all these different things to try to build myself to be a better player, because there is a part where he does talk about being not just being recognized for being a good player, but actually being a good player. And I want to be the latter.
You brought up something really interesting, Hallie, about, you know, communication, and everybody should have their own opinion. And, you know, with that said, though, I think there's the need for each person as an individual to, you know, be allowed to be wrong, or to, you know, sort of have that freedom. But I also think we need to extend that to other people, where it's okay to have other people be wrong too. Mm-hmm. One of my big pet peeves is where I try to suggest something kind of off the wall, and, you know, 80 million people crawl into my mentions to say why it's dumb or why it's a bad idea. And, you know, I've gotten a lot better at not being that kind of person. But sometimes, you know, one of the reasons I've really enjoyed vintage so much is people are just trying everything. The guy who built my deck, for example, has been coming up with like an Eldrazi Dredge hybrid of like Eldredgy, which sounds like a Latino bird Pokemon, but I mean, it sounds amazing. But, you know, they're just so not afraid to try things. One day I caught him streaming and he had a sideboard of all zero cost creatures. His theory being that if everybody's running Grafdigger's Cage, you can still make creatures with Bridge from Below. And so he was playing really shitty creatures like Shifting Wall and Endless One and just sacrificing the Cabal Therapy. And then he could make a bunch of zombies. And I was just like, girl. But at the same time, it was like, I was fine. I didn't necessarily know that what he was doing is wrong, but at the same time, I also allowed him that freedom to be wrong. And, you know, I feel like in addition to allowing ourselves the ability to be wrong, I think we need to allow others that freedom as well. And, you know, we don't have to swoop into everybody's lives around us and fact check them or, correct them. You know, sometimes you just have to be like, all right, girl, like that's okay, you know,
yeah.
And just sort of let people find out for themselves. And that's something I would really like to see, because that's very frustrating for me, especially with some of the weird decks that I play. You know, everybody feels like they know something more than I do, and there are times I just wish people would just sort of let me have that, like let me fall on my face. You know, if it's dumb, let me find out that it's dumb and I'll completely cop to it being dumb. But if I don't have the opportunity to know for myself, like, what am I really learning here? And so I really hope that we kind of extend that freedom on both fronts, to ourselves and to other people.
Yeah.
So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I have something.
Yeah?
It's not Magic related at all, but I wanted to talk about a new project that I started this weekend that I thought was really successful and that I want to do going forward. So in the last several months, I've been trying to think of ways that I can better connect with my community. I know that I've had the privilege of being able to, you know, participate in the Magic community and be a vocal proponent of women in Magic and inspire other women to play Magic, help other women in the Magic community. But I've been thinking more about how I can do the same thing on a broader scale for women in my community. And so one thing that I decided to do was start a women's group at my house. And the idea was I would just have a handful of women over, not necessarily women who all knew each other, but women who had opinions but could still, you know, listen to each other and have a productive discussion. And we would basically just have a meal together, you know, very relaxed, low-key environment, and just talk about whatever was on our minds. And the objective was just to help women build confidence, because I know so many women in their 20s and 30s who have told me, I just don't feel confident at work, or I don't feel confident in my relationships or in general. And I just wanted to give them a place to lean on each other and talk about anything that was bothering them, anything that was on their minds, really, positive or negative, and to try to, you know, organize in any sense of the word to, you know, pursue some kind of a hobby or, you know, something that they wanted to accomplish. And we had our first meeting yesterday, you know, as of this recording. And it was actually really good. I had four women who are all friends of mine, who I know in different ways through different people, who didn't know each other before they all came in the room. And they actually got along really well. We had like a 3-hour discussion, and I came in with, you know, my talking points and, you know, with my moderator hat on, and they just started talking. Like, one of my friends came in and she was crocheting, and another one of my friends was just like, oh, you crochet? That's really cool. I've always wanted to do that. I'm really into paper crafting. And they just started talking about that. And, you know, the other two women came in, and we all just had this really great, really productive discussion that everyone felt good about afterwards. And it seemed like everyone felt good about themselves afterwards, and that they really wanted to do this again. So I know Courtney had asked me about this when I posted on Facebook saying I wanted to do this. And a number of women that I know in other cities, you know, other than Seattle, said, hey, this sounds really cool. Let me know how it went. So it went really well. And I strongly encourage people to organize groups like this, because I think it can do a lot of good.
That's really
awesome, Hallie.
Yeah, I did think that was a really cool idea, and I've been thinking about the same thing, you know, getting working with other women in the community. And one thing that I'm actually doing personally, I haven't started a group or anything, but I am getting involved with a group of women, the local roller derby team.
Nice. Yay. That'll be fun.
So I'm not quite up to skating in the fresh meat class yet, as they call it. I'm very out of shape, and I haven't been on skates in a few years. But in the meantime, I'm volunteering with them, helping with them with some officiating off the track. And while I get to know them and see if it's a good, if I like the group, see if I like the sport, although it's certainly very exciting. Get myself on some skates, and maybe in a few months we'll see what happens.
That's really cool.
Okay, I have to bring this up, and I think this makes a great way to close out the show. You know that in roller derby, they tend to have really awesome names.
I know.
For example, our friend Jess Buchanan, her Twitter name is Bloody Mess Jess, and that's actually her roller derby name. All right, I'm going to ask this question to all of you. If you had to make an MTG-related roller derby name, what would your name be?
Oh, God. This might have to be, like, a continuation into next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've already...
There's so many.
I've already started thinking about this, because I'm probably going to have one. It'll probably be magic-related, and I'm still not sure what it's going to be yet.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I think we should open with that next time.
Now y'all have homework, but I'll get out of it.
And if anybody's listening to this show, if you have any ideas for magic-themed roller derby names, you need to send them to us on Twitter or at thegirlfromback@gmail.com, and we'll read them on the next show, because I think we'll have some, at least by the next episode. I think we can do it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No
stuff. Jeez.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on Instagram and Snapchat at HalCanSan. And if there is, you know, support for this women's group that I'm starting, I may look to write an article about it somewhere with instructions for starting your own group.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My Snapchat is CrypticCommand with K's. I kind of, sort of, got a hood stream going. So twitch.tv/tokriz. And also, as a reminder, this is your last week. So the last day will be when this episode airs to get in all your deck reports to me. Please send them to the email that I previously listed. I want to hear how you guys did. I've already received some submissions, so please, please, please. This really means a lot to me, and I want to see what your experience was, and I can't wait to read everything.
And Courtney, we just want to say thank you so much for coming back on the show. Like I said, it has been such a joy to watch your journey, and we're all rooting so hard for you, and we just wish you all the success in the world, whether it be with the roller derby or whether you keep going with the Magic the Gathering or whatever it is that you do. We just want to keep encouraging you and hope that you keep doing well.
Thank you guys so much. I've had a lot of fun talking with you. I hope to do good at all the things. All of them. That's the goal. Why not? Why stop now? If anyone wants to chat with me, I'm on Twitter at BioVisionary, just like the Magikard. You might remember it's a little bit simpler than my old name from when I was on last time. Because when I made it, I didn't think about the fact that I would have to maybe spell it out for people out loud. Like, I'm not going to give it to people. No one. But anyway, here we are at BioVisionary. Come see my Karn pictures. I tweet magic and baby pictures.
Very cute baby pictures. He's so big.
I know. He's not a baby anymore. But I guess he's always my baby. Isn't that how? I guess that's how it goes.
Yeah. But that means, you know, the bigger they are, that means you have more free time to do things you want to do, like grind magic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. It's true. We're fortunate to have grandparents here who are always willing to babysit.
And also, like we used to say in World of Warcraft, free labor. He can sort your cards. He can sleeve your decks.
He's practicing his colors with the lands, and he knows, he also knows their names, mountain, island, swamp, and so on. He loves to carry around D20s. He knows Liliana, Nissa, and Emrakul. So I think I'm starting him out right.
That's awesome.
I love that. I love that. 2 years he played Rockers. Big, bad, Emrakul. Love it.
Well, his daddy has an Emrakul t-shirt, so, you know, it's, he sees that often. And then, you know, Liliana and Nyssa are always around, so.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. And thanks again for coming on the show. We'd love to have you back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can also email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.